Good morning, good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of Meet the Expert. I'm Elliot Callan, president of Prosperity Financial Group. Today, we are with Tracy Tamora. She is a regional vice president for Midland National Life. And we're going to talk about that subject that nobody wants to talk about, and that's life insurance. And yes, everybody, we're all going to die. We may not have a fire and burn down a house. We may not get robbed and ever use our homeowners insurance, but we will die. So how do we take care of this? We're going to talk a little bit about taking care of the elderly, if that's for somebody else or ourselves, and how to use insurance to help us with that. So welcome, Tracy.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on your podcast today, Elliot.
Great. So let me ask you some basic questions, Tracy.
You got it.
And that is, we know what life insurance does. It pays money when somebody dies. That's the obvious part of it. But there's term insurance, there's permanent insurance, there's index whole life, there's index universal life. There's a lot of insurance out there. Can you tell us a little bit about what the differences are between all these insurance policies?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's a great question, because I think that especially over the last 10 years or so, the marketplace has become prolific in terms of the types of policies that someone can purchase and still call it life insurance. So I think the easiest way to explain it is to just start with term insurance, because I think most people understand term insurance. And in reality, even in permanent life insurance policies, whether they're whole life or variable or indexed or fixed universal life or any flavor that we want to talk about, at a core, they're all term insurance. So when term insurance first came in the marketplace, it was called annual renewable term. So you'd buy a term policy, 1 year it would cost one cost, and the next year the cost would change based on your age, and that kind of would keep going until you decided that cost was no longer feasible or you no longer thought you needed the insurance. So in today, when we have term insurance, we usually buy it in level periods, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 30 years. And so what the company does is they basically take the premium that someone would pay at the beginning of their term plan, which would be much less expensive. And they look at the premium they would pay at the end of, let's say, the 10 years, and then they come up with an average level cost. But in reality, what's happening is you're paying more in the beginning and less at the end than you would have if you were on annual renewable term. So that's term insurance. It's similar conceptually to thinking about renting, like renting an apartment. You have the coverage for 10 years. You've paid for the coverage for 10 years. You know, let's just say it was $1 million of coverage. In year 11, the idea is you feel you no longer need the coverage and it's gone, along with the premiums that you paid along the way. So, and can that kind of help to explain term insurance a little bit?
Sure.
Awesome. So if you move into permanent insurance, so I would probably say the best way to talk about permanent insurance is to talk about it that way and not worry about conceptually, whether it's whole life or variable or universal life or index universal life. I think that's part of what adds to the confusion. So if we talk about permanent coverage, what we're saying is that we have a desire to have life insurance in force when we die, whenever that is. And so to do that, the life insurance company, of course, has to make an estimate of how long they think your mortality is going to be. And today's policies actually, believe it or not, project all the way out to age 120. So of course, the premium for that is going to be more, because it's not 10 years or 20 years or 30 years. It's until 120 or until you die. So most of us are going to die before 120. but there are, believe it or not, some of these young people being born today where the estimates are they'll live close to that amount of time. So we're a little ahead of the curve from that perspective. So the cost isn't necessarily more than term insurance. It's just for a longer period of time, a period of time that we can't know, because if we knew when we were going to die, we'd just buy enough term insurance to get us to that day, right? So that's really the basic difference between the two.
Okay. So I know that we're going to talk about long-term care and how that works. And let me ask you one or two more questions about how life insurance works.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's also confusion about dividends, no dividends. Do I want to pay less but not get dividends? Do I want, aren't dividends just getting my money back anyway? So wouldn't I rather just pay less up front? Tell me why I would want something with dividends and why I wouldn't want something with dividends.
Perfect. Well, let's say why you would want a product that provides dividends or why you would want a product that provides a way of earning interest. And the way of earning interest might be many different ways. So in all permanent life insurance, whether it's whole life insurance or any kind of universal life, there is an opportunity to earn interest on the premium that you send to the company. In a whole life, you have a couple of options. You can just pick an interest-only option, or you can take the interest that you earn and you can apply it towards paid-up additions, or you can apply it towards dividends. And they're all of those things in a whole life context are provided by the company based on whatever internal mechanisms that the company has put in place to decide what that will be. So that sounds like really vague and almost like a political statement I just made. And it kind of is, because there is no rule book that says, you know, I'm with, you know, ABC insurance company, I bought a whole life policy, and you know, we can estimate what we think any of those things will be in the future, and then the company will decide that on an annual basis. So good, bad, I mean, that's relative. It depends on what the client is actually looking to do with the policy. So if their main driver is, I want to make sure that I don't really want to have to mess around with this policy in the future. I'd like it to just be, you know, there, you know, maybe I, you know, set it and forget it to some degree. And if there's some interest that accrues, if there's some paid up additions that happen, then that means there'll just be more for my beneficiary down the road. If I get interest over time, then maybe the cost of the insurance goes down a bit. So not a lot of moving pieces. And you know, to some degree, some people might think of that as safer. But in reality, the safety factor, whether it's a whole life policy or a universal life policy of some kind, is again relative to how it's organized. It's not necessarily inherently safer than any other kind of policy. So and then on the other side of the fence, a universal life plan, it's going to be constructed differently. And again, it's still going to be based on that annual renewable term internally. But now you have the opportunity to earn interest in a multiple different ways. One would be fixed. The company just declares it. So 1 year they say it's 5, 1 year they say it's 4, 1 year they say it's 3. And there's always some kind of minimum for that. And then variable universal life would be, I have a higher risk tolerance and I'm okay with my interest being participating directly in the market. So that would be variable. And then index universal life is a unique crediting method that you can only find in life insurance policies that is not direct market participation, but it is connected to an index. Like the S&P 500. And those policies have their own unique features. And which one is the best one for the client, for a person, has a lot to do with exactly what their intention is going into it. So that's really the bigger question is, what are we looking to do, more than worrying about kind of what exact policy are we looking at. That comes naturally once we know what our objectives are.
Oh, great. So I'm sure people are getting a little confused on that.
And that's okay. It's that's a lot to take in.
That's why you're coming to meet with us. So I get that.
Yeah, exactly.
life insurance has a special tax exception, I should say. Mm-hmm. So under certain conditions, not with term insurance, but with cash value insurance,
mm-hmm.
I can borrow from this. Now, tell me how this works.
Right. Exactly. So, and actually what's really, I think what's really interesting is the IRS guideline, that the 7702 IRS code for this particular aspect of life insurance we're going to talk about has been on the books for over 100 years. So it's been here for a long, long time. And it basically allows you to access any cash value that accumulates in your policy in a variety of different ways. And one of those ways is very tax favorable, and we might even say tax free. And the reason why that is because you pay your premiums with money that's already been taxed. So once it goes into the policy, accumulates into your cash value account, you're able to take a withdrawal of that tax-free. You're able to take a loan from that tax-free. And really, that's kind of when the differences in products really start to become more apparent, is what are the various ways we can access that money? And then again, what are the various purposes for doing that? Or do we do it because we had an emergency situation and we just determined, you know, this is an account where I can take money out of on a tax favored basis for a short period of time? Are we doing it for some type of supplement to retirement? There's a lot of different applications that can be applied. And again, it really works kind of across platforms, and like you mentioned, except for term insurance.
So we could borrow, one could borrow from your life insurance policy, Tracy, to help supplement their retirement or even fund their entire retirement if they needed to.
Absolutely. And it also, as long as it stays within certain IRS guidelines, which I'm sure if I started to talk about that, everyone would fall asleep. So we'll just say there are guidelines. As long as we stay within those guidelines, then we can use that money, that cash value, yeah, on that tax favored basis. And it's just unique. It's not available in that particular way in any other financial product. And it has its place, just like anything else that we do in our financial lives.
Great. So one of the things I'd like to talk to you about is we're getting older, and we may not die for a long time, but we might have a lot of issues going on between leaving work and dying. Alzheimer's, dementia, cancer, and so forth. And life insurance policies these days can be accessed. So how much does it cost now to get sick with long-term care needs? And then tell me how we could fund this, and what do you call it?
Right. Okay, good. That's a lot to unpack. So we'll start with, I'm not going to start with cost. I will just say on cost, because it's kind of relative, and it does depend on, you know, when we're talking about today, 10 years from now, 20 years from now. But here's what we know. We know that healthcare is not getting less expensive. We know that the cost of care is continues to rise. And we know that as we live longer, it doesn't necessarily mean we're preserving quality of life. So we've got a lot of challenges as we look down the road of how do we preserve quality of life as we age? And is there a way to do that? And I think that the current pandemic situation has really put a focus on this particular topic. When we see on the news people suffering in care facilities and the challenges that something, you know, like a pandemic, or you know, or even the plain old flu, you know, kind of what happens to people when they're in these facilities. And I think a lot of us have made the decision, or at least we're considering that, you know, if I can do something, I don't want to do that. You know, that I want to have a better choice. What a lot of people don't know is that life insurance provides benefits called living benefits. So now you don't just have to die. You can actually access your life insurance while you're living, not through the cash value, but actually through an acceleration of the death benefit. So again, let's just say it's $1 million policy. And I like to use an example that's not that I'm you know, old enough to that you would all think about going into a care facility. But let's just think about if we went to Tahoe and we're skiing and we get distracted and we fall and we break our hip. Okay. If that happened to me and I go to the doctor, I probably don't want to go into a care facility for that. I'm probably just going to go home but I'm going to need some extra help at home to care for myself during this this time period, which is really considered a chronic illness. And so there is a lot that can happen between the time that we're maybe getting a little bit older and getting to the place where people would traditionally start thinking about a long-term care facility. And how do we pay for that whole spectrum? And that's really the big question now is how do we cover all of that? And it's not just long-term care anymore. It's chronic illness, critical illness, and then terminal illness too, right? People who are diagnosed with a terminal illness, where do they come up with the money to maybe do some alternative treatments? Or quite frankly, if they know they only have a couple years to live, maybe they want to go travel the world or something like that. I mean, to have those types of choices, I think if people knew that they could do that, they would investigate it more. And you can do that inside of a life insurance contract. Again, different than you can any other type of contract, including traditional long-term care.
Tracy, what is the difference between an living benefits of an insurance policy and a long-term care insurance contract?
Yeah, great question. So two things to note. One is there's a lot of differences. I'll talk about that. Traditional standalone long-term care is usually and traditionally tied to some very specific things. Like, for instance, you might have the opportunity to have some in-home care in your long-term care plan, but it probably dictates who can provide that. So when I say that, like maybe it and most typically it'll say, you know, by a registered nurse. So a registered nurse is going to be a lot more expensive than having somebody from a care facility come and help you. You know, and again, thinking about like if we broke our hip or something like that. And then also it's usually a reimbursement plan where you have to actually collect receipts. So you're paying for it up front, taking in your receipts, and then sending your receipts to the company. So that can become cumbersome. I also think that's a challenge when we talk about things like Alzheimer's and dementia. You know, if we're paying for our care during those times, you're going to need to have somebody else be taking care of all of the accounting that's going on to make sure that you're being reimbursed for all of those costs. So now that doesn't mean that people should not look at long-term care or that there's something inherently wrong with long-term care, but it does mean that there's some challenges. And I think we just need to be honest about that. There are challenges with it. There are challenges with the cost, and there are challenges also for qualifying. So, you know, in kind of our terms, or you know, insurance terms, the qualification for long-term care is based on morbidity. So it's based on your current health, and the qualifications for life insurance are based on mortality. So how long is your life expectancy? So a really quick way to think about that is if let's say I had back issues, and let's say I've had some back surgeries. That doesn't necessarily mean that my life expectancy is less than somebody else's, but it might mean that long-term care is going to happen potentially at a higher rate than somebody else. So it would be hard for me to get a long-term care insurance policy, and it would be less hard for me to get a life insurance policy with an extended living benefit that I can use to supplement long-term care costs. So different avenues to explore. In an ideal world, you know, it would be great if you could afford both, right? If you could have some long-term care and some accelerated benefits, and you'd have the life insurance for legacy. In a perfect world, we were able to have all these things, but not many of us can do that. So those just in being aware of all the different options, I think, is what's really important.
So to get a contract, a life insurance contract with living benefits, I still have to take a mini physical, don't I?
Yeah. So today, actually, often, depending on your age and depending on the amount of coverage that we're looking at, there's many times where people do not have to go through a mini exam. But if you do, then yes, there's a mini exam, and it consists of a few things. And it's the nice part is you actually can get all your results too, so it can literally be a mini exam, give you a little health checkup. And again, the requirements for the life insurance with the living benefits are different and less stringent than the requirements for a traditional long-term care plan.
Okay, what if I've got the contract, but I want to surrender it? How does that work?
Right. Another good question. So I think another thing that people worry about with long-term care is if I buy a policy for long-term care and then I don't need it, then what happened to that money? Right. And I think, as you mentioned at the beginning of our time here, if you have a car insurance policy or home insurance policy, you know that you're making those premium payments and you hope that nothing ever happens. So if you apply that same methodology to life insurance or long-term care, that's what we're looking at there too, that for most long-term care policies, you're paying into the contract. And if you never need it, if you never use the benefit, there isn't a return of premium. Now, having said that, there are many contracts that have addressed that issue, including long-term care, traditional long-term care policies that have addressed that issue. The difference with a life insurance contract, there is definitely return of premium options. So I think that's really great. And again, something that a lot of people don't know. And in addition to that, if you never use the long-term care in support aspect of it, the chronic, critical, or terminal living benefits on the policy, and you die, there's a death benefit that goes to your beneficiary tax-free. So at the end of the day, either you can get the money back, or either you benefit from the living benefit, or your beneficiary benefits from a tax-free death benefit.
Okay, this has been great. I hope we haven't confused anybody.
I'm sure we have, but really that's the whole thing I think that's so important, is to know that there are options and then to know that you can come to your financial advisor and say, hey, I'm concerned about these things. What are my options? And get an answer that gives you the opportunity to look at different things that might fit better into your life than just one option.
Great. So we've been talking with Tracy Tamora. She's the Regional Vice President of Midland National Life. Tracy, I want to thank you very much.
Thank you, Elliot.
Life insurance.
Nice to spend time with you.
Absolutely. Life insurance is not simple and straightforward. It's something that needs underwriting, which is a mini physical. There are questions that you have to answer. There may be additional forms if you're surrendering a contract to buy a new contract, which people do. Maybe your health changed. Maybe you're healthier. And then again, maybe you're less healthy, and that's why you're buying life insurance. But these are great topics, and having health insurance and having that discussion about health insurance is part of the discussion about your estate. And do you have enough money to pay taxes? Is there money that you'd like to leave your children? Is there money you'd like to leave your spouse? The argument about tax-free or not tax-free. What happens if I live too long? What happens if I die too young? And what happens if I get really sick along the way? And that's where insurance comes in. So Tracy, thank you very much. And we look forward to seeing everybody on another episode of Meet the Expert.